We're going to start today with a couple of readings. The first one is going to, I promise, sound a little bit like, I wonder why you read that. And it feels like it's stuck in a weird place. We'll ultimately get back to it. Just try to think about what's being said. It comes from Ephesians chapter 4, verses 7 through 9. I'm reading from the New Revised Standard Version. And it says this: "But each of us was given grace according to the measure of Christ's gift. Therefore, it is said," this is the important part, "when he ascended on high, he made captivity itself a captive. He gave gifts to the people." When it says he ascended, what does it mean but that he also descended into the lower parts of the earth? Maybe a blessing and understanding to the reading of those words. Now, you might just like this one for a completely different word. If you're sensitive to language, there is a little bit of language in this that you might not be used to hearing in a church service, but it's the low end of that kind of language. It comes from Madeline Ryan's book, a fictional book called A Room Called Earth, in which she says, Hell is on earth. We create it. It isn't some faraway place that we get sent to once life is over, and we're being punished for all of our crimes and indiscretions. Our crimes and indiscretions are the punishment. Anything that makes us feel shitty and comes from a shitty place and inevitably leads to the expansion of the shittiness is hell. Just as anything that gives us meaning and comes from a meaningful place and inevitably leads us to the expansion of meaningfulness is hell. Go.
It's a song by George Harrison.
Day turned black, sky looked apart. I prayed for a year till I dampened my heart. Cracks and leaks, the floorboards look like about to go down, I almost forgot. All I gotta do is love you. All I gotta be is being happy. All I gotta take is a walk, make it blow away, blow away, blow away. Sky good, takes her to bright. Closing both eyes now, their head filled with light. Hard to imagine, stay out of sight. Instant amnesia, yeah, to yeah. All I gotta do is love you. All I gotta be is being happy. All I gotta take is the warmth to make it blow away, blow away, blow away. Rainbows appearing, the pressures were burst. Reasons are sinking, not feeling good. The moment had passed like I knew that it should. All I gotta do is
to love you.
All I gotta be is be happy. All I gotta take is a walk. Keep thinking, go away, go away, go away. All I gotta do is, all I gotta be is, all I gotta make is come on, make it go away, go away, go away.
Thank you, Nigel. My message this morning is entitled, What the Hell? So last week, I started my message by saying that we were going to talk about something that all of you already know, because I think that it is helpful to reinforce what we know from time to time. And today I'd like to do the same thing. And while last week we were talking about love, today, if you haven't figured it out, we'll be talking about hell. So several years ago, I asked a bunch of folks to let me know what verses they like the least and would like me to write about or to talk about. And one that came up a whole lot more than any of the others was, he descended into hell. Now, technically, that's not a verse. It's part of one of the church's most ancient confessions, the Apostles' Creed. In many Protestant churches, it is sort of a staple, as you know, on Sunday mornings. Most of you likely know about who God the Father, Creator of heaven and earth, and so on. Interestingly enough, that phrase, he descended into hell, wasn't even added to the creed until decades after that creed was first created. And like I said, there is no Bible verse that directly says it, but scholars believe that the verse I talked about was going to sound a little strange that I read earlier. Scholars believe that the verse that I read a little earlier from Ephesians, that those verses are one of the foundations for believing that Jesus descended into hell. We'll start talking about that. See, here's the thing. The verses themselves are nothing more than a very poorly constructed conjecture about a verse from Psalms that verse was about the Ark of the Covenant being carried victoriously to the top of Mount Zion with absolutely no reference to hell or some yet to come Messiah even. Not only that, the Ark of the Covenant was a symbol representing God, not representing Jesus. So it's strange that it would be used to talk about Jesus going to hell, particularly when it's not even used. Hell's not even used. The whole thing seems pretty preposterous, if you ask me. And that's because it really is. Like I said, that part of the Apostles' Creed is based on an inference, a conjecture, by Paul in his letter to the Ephesians. And frankly, it's not even a particularly reasonable supposition. The verse he quotes from Psalms in today's reading, a verse that is actually about God and not some coming Messiah, the verse he quotes begins with the phrase, when he ascended on high. And it is at that point that Paul infers that if Jesus, which again, the original verse isn't talking about Jesus, talking about God. He infers that if Jesus ascended, he must have first descended. Which, having more than my fair share of logic courses in my undergraduate degree with a minor in philosophy, I can tell you that is a staggering fallacious leap of logic. That because he ascended, he must have first descended. Now, the really outrageous thing about his backward logic, which seems to believe you must descend before you can ascend, is that he is using a verse that describes an object, the Ark of the Covenant, actually ascending without first descending. Honestly, it's just really sloppy work. To then take this sloppy, logic-lacking work and then further infer that it is about hell when it only says the lower parts of the earth, that is yet another leap of logic, particularly when you consider that in comparison to mountains like Zion, where the ark was taken in the verse that he's using, valleys could easily be considered lower parts of the earth. I do believe, however, it invites us to consider the concept of hell itself. While I personally don't believe in hell, even from a biblical point of view, if you ask most Americans about the afterlife, you'll probably get some version of heaven and hell. If you ask me, it's not only a rather odd concept, after all, would an all-loving God condemn someone to an eternity of hell for messing up on 70 or 80 years? Not only is it an odd concept, but in reality, even the earliest Christians didn't believe in a heaven and hell as the place, as a place in the afterlife. They didn't believe that that was what the afterlife was. Along with what I described earlier, it's part of why I have a problem with reciting the Apostles' Creed, and I have problems with it in multiple ways. But today we're specifically talking about the creed saying that after his death he descended into hell. But most folks who use this as a confession, as a statement of their beliefs, understand it to mean that during the 3 days between his death on the cross and his resurrection, Jesus took a little road trip to hell. A place where fire and brimstone were fire and brimstone, where sinners are doomed to an eternity of suffering and torment. And frankly, I just don't buy it. You just heard my primary issues with it. It's not just not biblical, and not only that, too, it takes some pretty sloppy work of logic to get it to even be slightly biblical. But there is another reason. My other issue with the confession that Jesus descended into hell has to do with the language used in the Bible to talk about hell. Both the words primarily used and the concept of the afterlife that that day and age had, both of those have nothing to do with our modern construct of hell, which our construct borrows from Dante's Seven Circles. On a side note, for those who believe I am a heretic for just saying things like this, like I'm saying today, this should all be actually very good news to you, because Dante believes that there is a special place reserved in hell for heretics like me, so don't worry about that too much. Winning at least one way. The word used in trying to support the teaching that he descended into hell is actually a Greek word, Hades. And that just doesn't mean hell the way we think of it. It simply couldn't have. Actually, in Greek, Hades is simply a place of the dead, all the dead. It's not a place of damnation. It's just where you go when you are really dead. It's the equivalent of the Hebrew word sheol, the abode of the dead. It's part of why I don't believe in the modern construct of hell. You see, the Bible does not talk about a literal hell ever. Period. I know that some Bibles have the word hell in them. But Jesus didn't have the word hell in him. And neither did the ancient writings that now make up the Bible. As a matter of fact, that word didn't even come into existence until some 700 plus years after Jesus. Jesus talks about Gehenna and Hades as the Greek god of the underworld. The New Testament also mentions Tartarus, only once though, and that's in 2 Timothy. The Old Testament talks only of Sheol, the place of the dead. While they all do have similarities, sort of, kind of, to hell as we've come to think of it, thanks to Dante, they are not, simply not, the same, or even close to being the same as hell. Just for fun, here's a quick background of those words that I just rolled up. Hades, as I said, is like Sheol. And they are places of the dead. All the dead, good and bad, that's where they go. Gehenna, which Jesus refers to the most, is the name of the burning trash dump outside of Jerusalem. Gehenna. And Tartarus is the place that fallen angels go to. So, as decidedly not actual angels and hopefully not fallen ones at that, we don't need to worry ourselves about Tartarus. Again, none of them are the same as our modern concept of heaven. Getting back to the Apostles' Creed, what's the wording, he descended into hell, finally made it into the Apostles' Creed? Like I said, it wasn't in the original. The word that was used was Hades. The point they're trying to make is actually a point that they use the word Hades that represents the place of the dead. It's not good or bad, it's for the dead. See, the point that they were trying to make was not that Jesus went to Dante's hell of suffering. The point they were trying to make is that Jesus was really and truly dead. So much so that he went to where the dead people go, Hades. And on the third day, he arose again from the dead. That's the point they were trying to make by adding the phrase, he descended into hell. He was dead as dead gets. He was Hades dead. That's what they were saying. And then, after 3 days, he wasn't dead anymore. We won't get into the resurrection thing. That's probably for a whole other talking points and sermons that I need to give. But we're not here for that today. I don't believe in hell. And any confession that requires me to believe that Dante's hell is not only real, but that Jesus went there, even though the Bible not only says little about it, but it also couldn't have actually said anything about Dante's hell. Well, that's not a confession that I care to confess. There are those who would say, well, you can understand the hell and the creed to me, whatever you want. Just think of it as a place of the dead. And for the most part, I agree. But there's a whole lot of church folk who don't. They don't agree, and repeating it every Sunday just reinforces their belief in a made-up place of suffering. And that's just bad theology. For them, if you don't understand hell to mean a place of eternal damnation and torment, well, you can't be Christian. As for me, I say, if you want to confess it, good for you. If it connects you with those who've confessed these things before you and it nurtures your faith, great. I just don't think that's a good enough reason to require me to confess it if I want to be considered a Christian as well. As a matter of fact, considering the things we've talked about today, Christianity should be big enough for a lot of varying perspectives on this. After all, I can promise you that whatever your concept of God is, it should be big enough for that. So, for me, when it comes to the question of hell, my answer is hell no.
Imagine there's no heaven. It's easy if you try. No hell below us, above us only sky. Imagine all the people living for today. Imagine there's no country. It isn't hard to do. Nothing. of thy voice. Lure me gentle. Imagine all the people living life in peace. You do. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will be as one. Imagine no possessions. I wonder if you can. Nothing, no need for greed or hunger. A brotherhood and sisterhood of man. Imagine all the people sharing all the world. You may say I'm a dreamer, but I'm not the only one. I hope someday you'll join us, and the world will live as one.
Let's take a moment together and bow our heads and accept this as a prayer, as a meditation. It's a moment to hold on to the words that you need most today. There are so many understandings of God, all pointing to the unknowable. So many faiths, so many denominations, so many differences. So many differences, even in the Gospels we read, even between theological experts, even between well-read followers, even between me and the others who hear this word, these words. This theme we call God is so ineffably difficult to pin down, to understand, to describe, to know fully. Yet we sometimes become full of ourselves, acting as if we know, hold, have the truth about God, believing that we have done what thousands of years of history have not been able to do. We sometimes think we have the final truth and understanding about God. In this knowledge, or lack thereof, may we humble our hearts. May we grow spirits more willing to admit what we don't know. May we be inspired to not only share what we have learned with others, but to open ourselves to what we can learn from them. May we nurture spirits which revel in reality that there is more to learn. Spirits which celebrate what we don't know because it means we can still grow in our understanding. Spirits which are willing to toss away what we once knew for understandings that more richly grow our spirits and connect us with each other and all of creation. We joyfully give thanks for all the possibilities which lie in front of us to grow and to share love more abundantly. Amen. Receive this blessing. May you walk in harmony with each other and with creation, recognizing we are one. And may you know love and happiness throughout your life. And may your life, your words, and your actions bring that love and happiness to all of those you love.